Live from the studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your host, Cliff and Robin, along with former Lane County Commissioner Cindy Wheeldryer and Pastor Bradley. Join us for a roundtable discussion of what's in the news today, and now, here's your host, Cliff and Robin.
Let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Really? Good morning, everybody. How are you?
Good morning. This is Robin, and that's Cliff that you heard over there in the corner. And in the other corner, which is kind of hard to have a corner since we have a round table, is Pastor Bradley's.
Good morning. I do have a parable for you this morning.
A what?
A parable. You know what a parable is?
What?
Not what I could say over the air. And Cindy, of course, is still on assignment and should be back next week. So, okay, what's a parable?
It's a little story. You get a message across by just a couple sentences. It's something that, like, a Confucius would say.
Okay, Confucius.
You ready?
You're Confucius.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, we're ready.
Confucius say, one who stands on toilet is high on pot.
But now pot.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thank you.
Exactly what I was expecting, but okay.
Well, hey, you wanted me to talk more, so that's what I'm doing.
Oh, God, are we in trouble now?
Pastor Parable.
The parable pastor.
Yeah. Anyway.
Welcome to Oregon Update, folks. It's going to be a crazy show. Today's show is basically the discussion on the national debt. Should we raise it? Should we not raise it? What are the consequences to it? And other issues that are in the news. If you'd like to join us, please do so. 646-721-9887. Once again, that number is 646-721-9887. You can join us in the chat room if you would like, which they logged me out of. You can join us in the Blog Talk chat room, or you can also join us in our own chat room, which does not require an account, with Blog Talk Radio at krbnradio.com.
I used to think when they said chat rooms when they first came out that how in the world do they find so many rooms around the United States to get in?
That's true. They're actually physical rooms. You have to drive there.
That's what I thought for a few minutes anyway.
Exactly. Speaking of craziness, I got one little I don't really have a what the heck segment, but I do have a kind of an interesting news article, and this one came out on June 3rd. MI6 attacks Al-Qaeda website. Basically, they hacked their website and changed how to make a bomb with how to make cupcake recipes.
Oh, boy.
I think that's great. That's
yeah.
Yeah, with a joint action by MI6 and UK's government communications headquarters, had agents insert into the magazine an encrypted version of the Best Cupcakes in America, published by Ellen DeGeneres.
Degenerate. Oh, yeah.
Pick the best cupcakes in America.
Yeah. So instead of instructions on how to make a bomb, you're going to learn how to make cupcakes.
And so did we find out which one is the best?
Actually, no. It did not rate which cupcakes won the best. But of course, it would be interesting, if Al-Qaeda didn't notice and they start lobbying, pastry at us.
Lobbying pastry. Well, that's fine. I want to know where they are, and I can be on the receiving end of the pastry.
That's true. just think how it would, instead of making lethal pipe bombs, it's how it would change the war.
You understand that it's going to destroy Michelle Obama because we can't eat the pastry; we're all too fat.
That's right.
Just as. As she got in big trouble for going to a fast food place.
I was just picturing that in the war room at the Pentagon, men, we're in a pastry war now.
Well, as long as they have some of them are chocolate with chocolate frosting, then we're fine. If there are no chocolate ones, then we are at real war. We're going to have to start lobbing something back at them. I don't know what, but
chocolate with custard filling.
How about Twinkies? You know that filling still a mystery.
Well, the whole Twinkie is a mystery.
Yeah, those things you can carbon date.
Yeah, that's true. They said that the Twinkie and cockroaches are the two things that will survive a nuclear war.
Well, that's fine. At least I'll have something to eat.
That's true.
And who knows, by that time, the cockroaches might be company. They could be talking to us by that point.
Some people say they already are.
But, you know, if it's a nuclear war, everybody knows that things are going to change. So it could be the cockroach.
Yeah. Speaking of cockroaches, did you know that there is a man here in Eugene who is running for president?
No.
And what does that have to do with the cockroach?
It depends on how you look at politics.
I was going to say, what are you calling him? Anyway, no, I had no idea we had someone from Eugene. Is this serious?
This is serious. 34-year-old Eugene resident Mark Callahan announced his candidacy for president of the United States in 2012. He says the country is on the wrong path, with nearly $15 trillion national debt, raising price inflation on food and energy, and high unemployment. He says, I must make the world and our nation great and a better place for my daughters and all the American sons and daughters to grow up in the future. So,
old to be president?
Say again?
How old do you have to be president? Isn't that it? The cutoff, 34?
I'm really not sure.
Right there somewhere, 34, 35 years old. I mean, he's just barely making it.
Huh.
I mean, I can call him a real youngster, just a child almost. Of course, he is to me.
Yeah.
He being ancient. So, and you know, he's got years and years before his body wears out.
Yeah. I think he's 35 years old.
Yeah. So he's just barely going to be there by 2012. I didn't know you could even run before then, but I guess you can. You just can't be president until you're 35.
Yeah. Well, maybe he figures by his 35th birthday he'll qualify.
Yeah. All right. Well, we should vote for him just for that reason.
Yeah.
Our youngest president.
Well, and maybe he's got a birth certificate too, because it says you have to be natural born and at least to live in the United States for at least 14 years.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know about the 14 years thing.
Yeah. But, you know, when they say, well, it can't be any worse. Oh, God. Don't give them any challenges.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that anymore. I was one of those people that said, well, what can he do in 4 years? Huh. A lot, unfortunately. And he's working very hard to do all of it, if he can, from the looks of things. So it's very, very sad, as far as I'm concerned, that we have somebody that's that bent on destroying the country if you can.
Well, and one thing it does show is, you know, in the 21st century, because things happen so quickly, it really shows that I feel that our system needs to be relooked at, just to put in better checks and balances, because so much can happen before anything can be countered, should I say, or stopped.
Well, see, that's because of everything has changed. Our media. Is so radically different now than it used to be. Our media is now instantaneous. I mean, when all of these rules and regulations and all these laws and things were put into effect years and years ago, we didn't have all of this instantaneous information available to everyone everywhere worldwide, not even just United States-wide, but worldwide. Everything is available immediately. You know, it used to be you had to put it in a newspaper, and then you had to wait for a train to take it across the country for the people on the other side of the country to find out about it or to read about it. And then for years and years, that was the case. And then after a while, we finally did get into radio and television, but even those were slow. But now everything is just instantaneous. And we need to change. We need to look at and be very careful to change some of our rules and regulations and some of our laws and some of our systems. For example, how we vote, the Electoral College and things like that. We really need to look at those very, very carefully. Of course, at this particular point, the word politics is synonymous with the word lie. And so I don't know if I want any of our politicians looking at what's going on and making suggestions, because I don't know if I can trust any of them. So who do we decide to go to trust to investigate and look at the laws and how much what should be changed? So it's kind of a dichotomy of what to do. It's sort of scary, as a matter of fact.
Well, that's what I'm saying about checks and balances. And speaking of checks and balances, let me get some business here out of the way real quick. Once again, the phone number, if you'd like to join us, 646-721-9887. You can join us in the chat rooms right now, either one of them, Blog Talk Radio or KRBNRadio.com, or send us an email, talk@KRBNRadio.com. And we want to get a sponsor out of the way here. No, I put that wrong. So we're going to pause for just a moment for this brief announcement.
Good dog, Skippy. Yes, Skippy is a very good dog, and I always enjoy working with him and like to reward him for a great performance. However, I am always hesitant and very selective in the types of treats that I will give him because I worry about his health and only want to give him something that's really good for him. That's why I always reward him with Dancing Dog cookies, because they are handmade to order from all natural ingredients and preservative-free. Plus, they come in a wide variety of styles and flavors. Skippy loves them, and I'm sure you will too, so check them out at www.dancingdogcookies.com.
Yeah, check them out and tell them that you heard it here on Oregon Update and the KRBN Internet News Talk Radio, and let them know that their ad is doing something for them. So.
Yeah, that'd be great.
So who is MF?
Yeah,
somebody with the initials MF has entered the chat room. So, hi. Hi, MF, whoever you are.
Well,
the reason I went to look at that chat room is because I wanted to remind everybody they can go to KRBN.com, and on the left-hand side of the page at the bottom, you can click on Dancing Dog Cookies and get to the website. It's real easy.
Absolutely. And they're really kind of cool, too. They're all handmade, and they make them in all different shapes, like like pancakes or whatever. So it's really kind of cool.
Cookies, not the dogs.
That's true. The dogs pretty much look like dogs.
And hopefully the cookies don't.
That's true. Anyways, today's topic, our main topic, that it can anything else you'd like to bring up or talk about, you know, give us a call, 646-721-9887. The national debt, why should we care?
Oh, let me tell you why you should care. There's so many reasons, it's not even funny. But the most important thing is we're so far in debt now, we're never going to get out. And that doesn't mean that it's okay to go further just because we can't possibly figure out how to get out anyway. We need to call a limit, put a line in the sand and go there. And this is the best time for it. The only thing that really ticks me off is they're doing the same thing every politician does, whether it's local or regional or state or whatever it is. They find the most vulnerable people to pick on. In this particular case, it's Social Security people. Obama went on the air and said he can't guarantee that the Social Security checks will go out. Well, you know, you're picking on the one thing. The Social Security is the one thing that is funded and has been funded and should go out. There are a million things other than that that don't need to be so carefully looked at, but you can't stop sending Social Security checks. And I know that's a lot of money and it's a big number, but you've got to send those. And, of course, I'm looking out for myself in this case, too, because I'm on the receiving end of the Social Security checks. So.
Well, and getting back to the question, why should I care? Social Security, Medicaid, payments to veterans are the couple things that are going to hit the American people hard first. Everything else that they want to cut, like overseas debt or spending or whatever, we don't care because we don't see it.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, we do somewhat see it, but there's a million things. They've already cut a lot of things. But I looked at one of these lists, and one of the first things on the list is the Department for Cultural, Media, and Sport. And what they're doing is shutting down the Stonehenge Visitor Center.
No.
Did you know we had a Stonehenge Visitor Center?
No.
I bet you didn't even know that, and now we've shut it down. Well, good. Stonehenge isn't in this country, not the real one. We've got a couple of them here. We've got one right here in the state of Washington over in the Dalles that's there. But there's no cost to go see it or go through it or anything. I've done that a million times. But they've shut down a bunch of programs, and most of them are programs that perhaps you didn't even know existed, and maybe it's about time we shut them down. There's enough. First of all, Stonehenge Visitor Center, that's a park type of thing, and that should be self-supporting. We shouldn't have to shut it down. It should be making enough money to keep itself open. If it's not, then it should be shut down. Because
yeah, they're cutting the wrong things out. I mean, they cut NASA and 10,000 jobs, but yet, you know, I'm just maddened. I'm just really upset.
NASA has been scheduled to shut down for a long time, and I mean, so that's not something new.
It is to me because of what I don't have the sound clip ready right now, but of what Obama lied about. That's what I'm ticked off about. But how committed he is, or was, or going to be to it, and totally does the opposite.
Well, see, unfortunately, that's what I say. The word politics and lie are interchangeable. I mean, if you're a politician, you're almost required to lie about things. And he hasn't disappointed us in any way, shape, or form, unfortunately. He does a great deal of both, lying about politics or lying because he's a politician.
Well, and what I heard in the news the other day is that half of our national debt is owed overseas.
Well, I mean, the money that we borrowed comes from overseas, half of it, and half of it comes from the United States. How we can keep borrowing from ourselves and considering that borrowing, I don't quite understand. So it should all be from overseas. But the point is, we've got to stop spending more than we take in. We do that to the accounting of about $120 billion a month. We spend more than we take in. And we've known about this for years and years and years and years. Why have we let it continue to happen? I mean, that tells me that we've got a whole bunch of really stupid people in our Senate and in our House of Representatives. And I can't believe they're really that stupid. So then they're obviously out to get us. And why are we putting people in office that are out to get us? And were they out to get us when we elected them? Or did they, when they get in there, do they finally find out what's literally going on and change their position and are ultimately out to get us? So something's radically wrong, and what do we do to fix it?
Well, and let me throw this out to you. They're attacking this like, hey, guess what? We got to do something with it, with the debt. We're coming up on the debt ceiling here and whatever, and it's like, oh, my God, I didn't realize that. You can't tell me that. I mean, the executive branch knew where we were going. This is, you know, but they're making this a last minute issue here. And you and I, we can't run our household budgets this way. I mean, if we maxed out our credit cards and went to the credit card company and said, I need to increase my debt limit here, and they're going to look and say, well, you've maxed out your cards and your revenue's down, and, you know, quite frankly, we don't think you have the credit worthiness to and financial responsibility to do that.
You know, interestingly enough, if you want to go back and look at it, we ran out of money back in May is when we literally ran out of money. Then we started changing things around and moving things around so they could continue going. And so on August 2nd is when we even run out of the repairs that we made to it. So, but it's not something that we didn't know about. We've known about it all along. It's something that this is where we've got to make some radical changes, because we either have to have a three-party system or a no-party system. This two-party system is all wrong, because we don't have a mediator. We don't have somebody in the middle. We don't have a third position to go to. That's why the Tea Party has become such a potent thing, and why it's become such a viable thing, because we need a third party. Need somebody to be in the middle, or somebody to be on one side or the other, so that you have a clear winner. It can't be this 50-50 thing, which is what we've been having for years. That's got to stop.
Well, I'll agree and I'll disagree with you on that. Is that two-party system, and this is one of my pet peeves, is I get so tired of hearing, well, we got to get along with people on the other side of the aisle. It's like, you know, you guys are all in one room. You have one goal. You know, go shake hands and get on with business.
Well, we know that's not going to happen. That's why we need to have a third party, so that they can weigh in on one side or the other.
And, yeah.
We've got to have that third party, but it needs to be official. The Tea Party is not an official party. They are becoming fast official, because they're actually electing people to office, which I think is great. But once they get to office, they still have they're still on one side or the other. And they're not on a third side. So we've got to officially come up with a third side so that there can be...
Well, why have any sides? I mean...
Well, that's what I said, either no sides or three sides.
Right, because before, when the two-party system was put in, you know, there's different sets of values, but it doesn't seem like, you know, people are really separating themselves that way anymore, the Republican-Democrat set of values. So why have two sides to begin with? Wouldn't it be better just to get rid of them and just have, you know, here's your so many representatives per each state, and, you know, that'll take care of the bickering, at least as
what I said. We can either have no sides or we can have three sides, but two sides is out of the question, and that's what we've got.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can have a 50-50 tie with two sides. You can't have a 50-50 tie with three or one. It's simple as that. We know not, and the only reason one side wouldn't work and melding everything together just to be one group is because they divide themselves up one way or another, for and against. So, in my opinion, a one-sided issue isn't. There can be no issues. And since there are issues, we've got to have three sides.
Well, yeah, okay, you make a good point there, but I don't know, like it... I guess what's so frustrating about this whole issue thing here is that, well, number one, the fact that they're threatening, like what they do locally here in Eugene, you know, like recently they cut the sheriff's budget so now there's hardly any sheriff's patrols, and, you know, they're doing everything to directly hurt the citizens. But like with the federal budget, the citizens didn't create the federal budget. The government created it. The government was entrusted with it. The government failed. And now, of course, we have to pay for it. And at least some people up there on the Hill, which I applaud, are saying we won't be able to tax our way out of debt that don't raise, don't raise taxes on the people that create jobs. And it's been, you know, any economist will tell you if you lower taxes, you'll gain more revenue.
Well, you know, there's only one problem with that, and this is not a matter of raising or lowering taxes as far as what you're being taxed. In other words, if you make $1 million and you're taxed 40%, that's fine and well and good, and lowering it to 30% or raising it to 50% is going to accomplish nothing, because they don't pay the 40%. That's the problem. We have to at least bring the taxes up or down or make them somewhere, but we have to get rid of the loopholes, and that's effectively raising taxes, I know, but you have to get rid of the loopholes. You've got to get it to the point that everyone is paying a tax, not just some people. You know, the middle class and the lower class are paying almost all of it because they can't afford to not pay it, because they could be put in jail. We don't have the wherewithal to keep ourselves out of jail.
And I've always been for the straight tax, you know, right across the board.
Well, straight, or how about a you know, get rid of the federal income tax and change it to a federal sales tax. You know, that way you can put the government directly in line with the health of the economy.
How about shutting the IRS down completely because they have their own, you know, enforcement, and then that's against the Constitution there.
Well, the IRS is against the Constitution, so yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So many things that we can get upset about, and so many things that are wrong, but ultimately, you know, we as people have to do our best and not sit back and say, oh, they'll do it. They'll try to get him out of office. I think there's too many lazy people out there expecting everybody else to do it.
Well, and
define they.
I don't know. Whoever decides that they don't want to get in politics and let people that like politics get involved, I'm not going to go vote. Somebody else will vote, so I don't have to. I mean, it's the whole gamut.
The problem, we are they, and we've got to live up to our own responsibility, and we're not doing that. We're all sitting back and saying, oh, somebody else will do it. Well, somebody else isn't doing it, and we're upset about it. So if we're upset about somebody else not doing it, we need to. And so we've got to decide who's going to make the decisions, and it needs to be the people. And we're giving the politicians the ability over and over again to make decisions without taking it to a vote, and we need to change that. Everything needs to go to a vote. I realize that becomes more expensive and that becomes a real pain, but we need to come up with every 2 years, we need to vote on everything. Absolutely everything needs to be voted on every couple of years. Don't have special elections because those make a huge amount of cost and people don't vote for them anyway. But you need to have every 2 years, you need to have an election, and we need to know that the things that are going to be on that election affect us, and we need to do something about them. But we need to have them every 2 years so that we can know that things are going to happen. And we can that cost can be absorbed. That's not a problem. It isn't anywhere near the $14 trillion that we're already in debt. So it wouldn't be a problem. It could make a huge difference. But we've got
fine. Let we the people be the third party then.
That's a great idea. We the people need to get our butts in gear.
Well, in a way, that's what the Tea Party is trying to do. But to go along with what Cliff was saying, in Lane County here, I don't know, about 10 years back, they tried to pass a thing that nothing in the government, local government here, can get funded unless it went to the vote of the people. And so they're saying, one, well, that means if we go out and buy a new photocopier, that's going to have to go in for a vote. Or two, it's too many. People are complaining that there's too many things to vote on.
Well, that's what we've got to get used to, is there are going to be a lot more things to vote on.
Well, I think just, again, to go back to your point, the government doesn't want us to be involved, period, because, I mean, basically all we got, our only input is either, you know, who we elect and hope that they'll do what they promised, or to send letters and phone calls to our representatives. And that's why they don't like the Tea Party, because they don't like people organizing.
That's where we've got to get back to the business of realizing that we are the government. We have elected officials that represent us, and we need to be more controlling of what they do. But we technically are the government. And I think we're actually getting around to that. This last election, we changed a lot of people. And I think we're about to change a whole lot more people in the next election, right from the president right on down. And so we've got to get into gear and thinking about what's going to happen in 2012. And I think we're doing a very good job of that. And who knows whether maybe this debt ceiling thing is going to actually wake us up a little, so that we can actually think about things and about what is going on. We've already passed the debt ceiling problem. I mean, we've already determined, or at least our representatives, let's put it that way, have already determined that the debt ceiling is already passed and that we've got a problem with it. But we've got to do something about who's there in office and make it sure that we stop spending more than we bring in. And we can do that. That's not really that difficult to do.
Yeah, but you're going to have to make some changes in the rules. Like we've debated on many times, Portland, Oregon has in its, I think it's its city charter, that a certain percentage of all construction has to be spent on art. And I think you have to set your priorities is that, you know, first of all, what is the role of government, which I think on the top of the list is the protection of its people. And like here in Lane County, when you're not funding the sheriff's department, you're not going along with it, with government's primary role. But when you're diverting limited funds to something that really shouldn't have a very high priority, that's where I think needs to be re-looked at. I mean, you and I have to do that on our limited funds.
Well, I still, we've got a real problem when we start focusing on spending money for art, because that's such a minuscule little amount that it just hardly is even worth worrying about. But the point is, we need to change a little of everything that we spend. We don't have to cut out art entirely. We just need to cut out a portion of it, just like we need to cut out a portion of everything else. But we don't need to make that portion of what we're cutting out bigger in some places than in others. And we seem to be doing more, for example, in law enforcement than anywhere else. We seem to feel that that's not a problem. We can just let people get away with anything they want to. But a lot of these things, a huge amount of these things, can be done by individuals or by hiring it done rather than making the government pay for it. We can, you know, each individual community is going to end up having to hire their own police department or their own sheriff's department or whatever, because we've got the numbers down so far. But the thing is, we need to be doing that everywhere. We need to be spending private money on schools. We need to be spending private money on everything. And so because either that or everything is going to be cut to the point of nothing. We're going to have nobody on the highways stopping people or controlling traffic or anything else. And then if that's going to be the case, it's going to be private people somewhere along the line, whether they're on their own or whether they're hired by cities or states or what.
Well, yeah. I mean, you make a good point, and maybe sometimes in the private sector would be better. But again, you know, we elected these people to be in the executive office and in Congress and to be our representatives, to like being board members to a corporation to run the company in a efficient and profitable manner. And I think, for one, my personal opinion is, they're not doing that job, and two, the job they are doing is self-serving.
So what's the answer to that?
What is the answer? I mean, just like on the federal deficit here, part of me is saying, let it fail. You know, don't raise the debt ceiling. Let it fail. Yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah, they're going to do everything they can to hurt people directly, like withholding Medicare and Social Security payments and whatnot. But all that's going to do is hopefully it'll make people so mad that they'll stand up to their representatives and say, hey, you created the problem. We didn't. This is your responsibility to manage, and you're not doing the job.
Well, it's pretty sad that it's taken this long for we the people to get angry. That, you know, you're saying, wait till we get more angry. Should have happened a long time ago.
Well, it should have, but unless it affects you personally, and again, this is one of the reasons why, you know, we elected people to manage. You know, yeah, as a good boss, because they're supposedly work for us. You know, we should be making sure they're doing a good job. So that's our fault for not doing it. You're right. However, just as the individual, unless it affects you directly, we're struggling to worry about our own lives or in our family, not what somebody's doing on the other side of the U.S.
Yeah.
Okay, so all that's well and good. So we let all of this default What do you do about the people on Social Security, for example, that then have no paycheck and can do nothing about it? As an individual, what can you do?
Well, okay, look at the domino effect that it would create. If you didn't get a paycheck, and say you don't have any savings, like a lot of people on Social Security don't, you can't pay your bills. If you can't pay your bills and enough people can't pay those bills, then the next step can't pay their bills. And if they can't pay their bills, the next step can't pay their bills. And finally, you wind yourself into a huge deficit or more of a depression.
Well, that's why we need to go with what the scripture says. And back in the Bible times, they had year of Jubilee where they erased all the debts every 7 years.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, if that'll work for us too.
If you can't erase the debts, I mean, you know, the problem with Social Security people, for example, is it's maybe they don't have debts, but they do have current, like your rent or your house payment or stuff that happens every month. It's not a big debt that you owe. It's something that you have to have monthly, or you don't have a place to live, or you don't have groceries or whatever.
Well, yeah, and that kind of goes along with my point. Say take an apartment building or retirement building or whatever, where you have 100 residents. If those 100 residents can't pay their rent, then the owner of the building can't pay their mortgage. And if the owner of the building can't pay their mortgage, then they, of course, can't pay their bills. People aren't buying food. More people are going on government assistance, but if the government assistance isn't there because they just cut it off, what happens?
Well, see, that my problem with this whole thing is we're talking about something where these people have paid for years and years and years in order to have that at the end of their lifetime or at the end of their situation, and now we're cutting something off that has already been funded, it has already been paid for. It's not something that should even be on the table, as far as I'm concerned. Of course, because our government, our representatives, if you wish to call them that, have changed the rules and taken some of that money, a great deal of that money that has been paid in by people somewhere along the line, and sending it out to people who haven't paid, you know, they're squandering that money. And so there should be money taken from somewhere else. That money should not be allowed to be adjusted or tampered with, because it's already been paid for by the millions of people who paid in for years and years and years and years to know that they had that coming in at the end of their life. And so how do we adjust that so that they can't take that money that's already been paid in?
Yeah, well, that's true. If they would have kept their hands off it. I mean, originally when Social Security was started, you know, was it Eisenhower, I want to say, but it started as the Townsend Act, which is supposed to be the poor man's retirement. And yeah, they have borrowed, quote unquote, money from the Social Security Administration. But no, I agree with you. I mean, most of us paid into it, and it should be there in our account, since we don't have a choice, unless you work for the railroad, of not paying into it. But there are other areas that they can cut, but again, what they're trying to do is the old trick of what's going to hurt the individual the fastest to get their way.
That's the thing that's a problem. We need to find somebody who can stand up for us, and obviously it's not going to be our president, but we need to find out somebody who can stand up for us and change this thing so that in 2012 we at least get some sort of security, let's put it that way, to know that the things that have been there and have grown over the years are going to be there. We've got to find somebody who can fight for the people instead of for the government, and we don't have anybody there. At this particular point, the only one that I can think of who might even have a chance of doing something like that would be Newt Gingrich or perhaps Ron Paul. We could perhaps vote for Ron Paul. And I don't know exactly what his situation, his beliefs are on Social Security, but I need to look up and find out. But, you know, there are things there that can't be touched. There are things there, for example, repairing roads and working things like that. If we don't do them now, they're going to cost us 10 times as much later. But there are a lot of things that can be cut and in small amounts and be gotten rid of. But the biggest thing, of course, gets back to the military and the fact that we don't need to be spending all this money being the lawmakers to the world, because the world doesn't like it. And we're finding that out more and more and more when we start hearing about polls about what other countries think of us. I saw a thing on the television the other day. They were saying that the people in the East, in Syria and places like that, don't really like us. And they said, well, what about Egypt? Here we did all this, and Egypt won their supposed so-called war. Don't they like us? And the answer came back that Egypt doesn't even consider us. They don't consider us as helping or hindering or anything else. We didn't do anything. And so we're not even a consideration in Egypt. So we need to get our butts out of there. Spending $2, $3, and $4 billion a year to be ignored just doesn't make much sense to me, especially when we're doing it in so many different countries and so many different places. And we could take a great deal of that out and have a lot of our problems solved overnight by just doing that. And if they don't care about us in the first place, why are we still there stuffing our nose in where it doesn't belong?
Well, I'm sure there's some side reason to it, just like there's a side reason for us being here, and that is so you can join us at 646-721-9887. Always look for an opportunity to throw that phone number in. Here's a question I want to throw out to you about speaking of budget cuts. Law enforcement agencies, federal law enforcement agencies, how many different law enforcement agencies do you think that the federal government has?
The federal government?
Right.
Scared to ask.
Well, the federal government has 17.
17. Why does it need 17?
Oh, is that right? I don't know. I made that number up.
Oh, you did? I thought you knew the answer to that.
I figured you knew the answer, and we're going to say no.
Okay, well, the two most popular, of course, are the FBI and the CIA. Then you throw in the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agencies, the ATF.
And those are all part of the NSA.
Right, exactly.
No, I agree that there's way more than we really need to have. And what's more is the unfortunate part is that one government agency doesn't spend any time informing the other government agency what they're doing. And we often have more than one government agency doing the same thing at the same time, and both of them asking for money to do so, and neither one of them needing to be there to do it. The simple fact is we only have one set of laws, supposedly, and if we would just simply have everybody charged with enforcing those laws, and everybody doing the same thing, then we only really need one organization, and that could solve a lot of problems. We could have a lot less bosses and save a lot of money by just having one organization that covered everything.
Right, exactly. That's kind of my point. I mean, we used to get by with just two, and now we got half a dozen agencies, which, like you say, probably doesn't even talk to each other, and more or less are doing duplicate work. So why not combine them for one?
Well, again, in order to combine them, we'd be putting a lot of people out of business, because each one has its own bureaucracy, and that's what we need to address probably somewhere along the line, maybe in one of our programs, is the bureaucracy. What is a bureaucracy, and why do we have it, and why do we need it? Because in my experience and from what I've been able to see, it's the bureaucracy who actually changes the opinions of those who are elected. We elect someone to go to serve in an office for us, and when they get there, they have 22 people in that office telling them what to do, and they listen to those people, because those people are the ones who have been there and supposedly know what's happening. But those people are the ones who have been there and the ones who are shaping what's happening. Perhaps we should change the bureaucracy with elections just as often as we change the actual senators and representatives, other different elected politicians. The bureaucracy is what's running our country, not the politicians, I get the impression.
Well, I agree. I'm kind of perusing over this list of departments within the federal government, and it's kind of interesting. Like, there's the, just throw out a couple, like the Office of the First Lady, Domestic Policy Council.
See, now, what is the Office of the First Lady? How many people are in employed in that, and why? And why does the First Lady, I mean, she didn't get elected to anything. She's just there. And why should we allow her any responsibility whatsoever for running the government and running our country if she's just, I mean.
Well, here's the First Lady has a staff that includes a the White House Secretary, Chief of Staff, Press Secretary, Chief Floral Designer, Executive Chief. It's and I can go on and on with this, but I
wouldn't mind allowing the First Lady to have someone to help her cook. I mean, you know, the cooks and people who entertain, because entertaining is a great deal, a great important deal for our White House and for our government. And I can understand that, because when you allow other people to come from other countries, you've got to be careful how you treat them and be careful what you feed them and how you talk to them, because, you know, saying something in one position could be offensive in another. I mean, I think that the people of India and Pakistan and such over there are going to take offense at our president talking about sacred cows. It's no big thing to him, because it's just a saying to him, but it means something to some people in the world, and he shouldn't be saying it if he doesn't know what he's saying. So there are instances, but the First Lady has a staff of, like, I think it's 17 people or 18 or 19 people. I mean, I watched West Wing, and I knew all of this at one time, but it's been a while.
Oh, yeah, but, if it was on West Wing, it's got to be true.
Well, it was true. It is true. You can look it up and find out what the staff of Michelle Obama is. But she shouldn't be allowed to make laws and to do the things that she's doing. It's not
her. That's crazy. Crazy, crazy. What you just said.
That she shouldn't be allowed to make laws?
Right.
Yeah.
She should?
Well, I mean, just because you're married to the president, I mean, what's your qualifications? I mean, just like this deal with the fat or obesity. You know, what's her qualifications? Does she have a degree in dietary, whatever they call it, dietitian?
Well, even
she's all over TV during Saturday morning during kids' times, telling us how good we need to eat while she goes on TV and tells us how many French fries she eats and ice cream.
Well, yeah, I think that's kind of interesting that she, you know, she should be held to the same standards, at least as other politicians. And I understand what they're talking about. They're saying, well, you know, it makes a difference how you eat, how much you eat in a week or a month, not how much you eat daily. But if you, because you can binge one day and cut back the next, or maybe she went on a long run the day before and saved up enough room for that. But the point is, she shouldn't be being the one who's making those decisions or in the first place. She should be there simply to help as a background person for the White House to like you say, have flowers put around and to have certain decorations in the White House and to perhaps change those depending on who you've invited to the White House and what they're going to see. I mean, but to have a huge staff and to be doing national advertising, et cetera, the president's wife was not intended for that purpose.
Well, yeah, who's footing the bill for that?
We're footing the bill for all of it. That's no big thing. We understand that. But it's just that that's just not the position of the president's wife, or shouldn't be.
Speaking of, here's a few more titles of some of the legislative branches. We have the Office of the Chief of Protocol, Office of War Crime Issues. We got the Office to Monitor and Combat Trafficking in Persons. It's quite an interesting list.
An awful lot of different offices and different departments and things that could be eliminated and save us a lot of money. The only consideration that I have is that if we go through and start cutting all of these positions and all of these offices and all of these ministries, for example, then we're putting people out of jobs. And that's a problem, too, because we don't have enough jobs to go around. So we've got to come up with other ways of doing this rather than just cutting things off. We need to have a possibility of cutting down. For example, it's right now government employees make fully twice as much as civilian employees in the same approximate positions. So we need to address how much they're making, not whether they're making anything at all. So if we were to cut everybody down to the same thing as in the civilian positions, we could save half of the $100 billion that we're spending on those positions.
That's true. We also have a citizens stamp advisory committee. We have our, where the other one goes, the Defense Acquisition University.
You know, it's another thing to think about and to look into is a lot of these things could be made to pay for themselves. You talk about stamps. A lot of stamps, believe it or not, the stamps actually pay for themselves. I know the post office department isn't doing it, but a lot of times these stamps are made and they're sold to collectors and such things before anybody else, and they actually pay for themselves in that position. But and a great many things, the Parks Department, there's a great many places that need to be put onto a self-sustaining position. And if not self-sustaining, then turn them off. Because if we're not interested enough to going to a park to make it pay for itself, then it doesn't need to be open. So that's any other business. For example, of course, I'm not even going to get into General Motors and the fact that if it didn't pay for itself, we shouldn't be supporting that either, because they're never going to pay that money back. They just move it from office to office and pretend they did. But, I think General Motors could have gone bankrupt and it would not have destroyed our country, because in the first place, it would have simply been a reorganization and they would have come back and been more concerned about paying their bills.
Well, true. And I don't want to get too far off topic and again, invite people to, you know, check out our chat rooms at Blog Talk Radio and at krbnradio.com. And specifically, I'd like to invite people to call us 646-721-9887. Any speculation? I'm going to put this out to the roundtable. Any speculation on what's going to happen after August 2nd, which is the deadline that President Obama has set?
Good question.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Cliff.
I was just going to say I don't think it's going to happen on August 2nd. Before that time or right after that time, the Republicans and the Democrats will come up with a cooperation, and it's not going to be right on anybody's position. The problem with it right now is more to the point they're doing things in small increments. That's not going to help our economy. It's not going to help our jobs. People are not going to go out and hire somebody if they know that in a year or less things are going to change and you don't know what's going to change too. There's got to be some stability put together in our government, and we haven't had that for years and years and years. So until we do, we're going to have a real problem. And I think I hate to say it, but I do believe we're going to have to default. We're going to have major faults, major failures before the country is going to actually get down and worry about it. Because, you know, we're always good at taking care of emergencies and urgencies, but we don't have one at this particular point. So until it becomes absolutely urgent, until it becomes an emergency, we're not going to consider it. And we're going to sit back and wait for the government to fix it. Well, the government is not fixing it. It's screwing it up. And now, until the government screws it up totally, and then we have to step in and fix it, we're just going to sit back and be fat and happy, like Bradley was talking about.
Well, and I think that, okay, first of all, we do have to get something under control so we can kind of balance things out, or at least keep things running for the moment. But I think after the dust is settled, I think that they, being the government, are going to think, well, people are just going to forget it. I mean, we got the debt, you know, I think we're going to raise the debt ceiling, and then I think they believe things are just going to go on same old, you know, business as usual. But I think and hope that people will remember this, and in 2012, really send the message that, you know, we're tired of this lackadaisy type of the way we're running government, and that was a reason why we did the hope and change things, that we were hoping that things were going to change for the better.
The thing is, if they fix it even partially or temporarily, we're not going to pay attention to that. Something has got to be done. Something's got to happen that affects everybody's pocketbook. You know, people who don't understand, for example, the people who live in Washington, D.C., they don't know what's going on. They don't live in the part of Washington, D.C. where anything is going on. If you look at the separation in that city, you go across the river, and it's a whole different world than it is where the politicians live. And they don't go over there to see what's going on, and so they don't know. And consequently, until it actually affects their pocketbook and their situation and their way of life, nothing is going to happen. And that's what's going to take place on August 2nd. We're going to do some sort of a compromise that's going to fix it temporarily, and the general public is still not going to know. The people who have the money is still not going to know.
Well,
here's my viewpoint.
Go ahead.
It's hard for me to, you know, think of that question and have a good answer for you, but what really has grabbed me and shaken me up a bit is how much money is spent on, you know, the First Lady and her kids. The recent trip when they went to Spain, it paid $2,500 a night, took 70 Secret Service men with them and women, and took Air Force Two, which cost $11,000 so per hour to operate, 47,000 gallons of gas. I mean, this stuff has got to stop.
Well, that gets back to what I was using the art as an example. Yeah, it doesn't seem like much money. I mean, it's okay, let me relate to this. It's like going out to eat. Yeah, you know, it might cost you $30, you know, to go out to eat tonight, which doesn't seem like that much money. But you go out tomorrow night and the next night and the next night and the next night, and those $30 adds up pretty, you know, $30 a night times 30 days is quite a chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
So it all adds up. And
senator and his senator's wife decides to go on vacation and go somewhere and do something. Do they have to pay for it themselves, or does the government pay for them? And two scenarios here. If the senator's wife has to pay for her own way, then the president's wife should also. And if the senator's wife doesn't have to pay for their own way, it's okay that the president's wife doesn't. But that means we've got 500 and some odd people that are doing this all the time, and that does start to add up the big money. So we've got to make sure that, you know, we're paying these people twice as much as we're paying the general public. So they should be able to pay for their own vacations. And as far as, you know, you're taking 70 Secret Service people with them, I can understand them taking Secret Service people. I don't believe that they need 70 of them, maybe 7. Even that's probably a high number as far as I'm concerned, but we'll go for that. But 70 is a long ways from 70, and these Secret Service people are well paid too, my friends. So we have to be more careful about what's going on. As far as the airplane is concerned, I would rather pay for that airplane and you know, her taking that and being safe than putting her on a general flight and not knowing what's going to happen. So, you know, let's cut down the amount of Secret Service people and then allow her to take that plane.
Now go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. That's fine.
Well, here, let me throw this question. can the U.S. just declare bankruptcy and wipe out its debts?
Well, that's what I'm afraid is going to have to happen. That's where we can't declare bankruptcy. I mean, you've got to look at what Greece is doing and what Portugal is doing and some of these other places. It doesn't boil down to being that easy. But we've got to do something similar to declaring bankruptcy. And, of course, that simply boils down to let's not start spending all this money and keep spending all this money abroad. We're spending huge amounts of money. Again, $600 billion a year in the defense budget. I'm sure half of that could be not spent, and $300 billion a year would go a long ways towards shoring up our economy. And then if you cut that down and then cut all the other things with it, we're talking about at least $500 billion a year, at least $1 trillion a year. And if we could save $1 trillion a year, the simple fact is it wouldn't be too long before we'd be back to a balanced budget and could get somewhere. Now, I'm not saying that's going to be easy or anything else. Again, we talk about not spending the money overseas. I'm not talking about bringing our troops home from anywhere, although we should be doing that as well. But let's not do that in wholesale numbers either, because, again, every 100,000 people we bring home is 100,000 more jobs we don't have. So, consequently, that's devastating. So let's stop paying other people's military bills instead of paying ours. And, again, we can always bring home some of our military people, still continue to pay them, but pay them to work on our borders, not somebody else's borders.
Well, agreed. And also, like with anybody else, if I didn't pay a debt, you know, they're going to come after me with collection agencies. But you can't do that with the federal government. I mean, like the money we borrowed from China, what if we just said, I mean, they won't do it because of, you know, trade and everything else, but what if we just said, you know what, we're not going to pay you?
Well, that's what we're saying. That's what, if we went bankrupt, that's exactly what we'd be saying. And what would China decide to do about that, or anybody else? It's not just China we're borrowing from. It's several countries that we're borrowing from. And already what's happening is that's exactly what Greece said, is we're going to declare bankruptcy. We can't pay it. Simply can't pay it.
So what are they going to do? They're going to come and repossess the U.S.?
They might. Yes.
How?
You've got to understand, we're not the big frog in the pond anymore. We're a long ways from it. We're like number six. And so there are many other countries that now have more money than we do, who now have the ability to do something about our not paying our bills. And they can. You got to understand how much of America is owned by people overseas already. When Japan was in their heyday, there were Japanese people here buying up countries constantly. Our biggest organizations, our biggest businesses are owned by people other than the United States. They're not United States companies anymore. General Electric, everybody considers that an American company. It's not. More of General Electric is owned by other countries than is owned in the United States. And the same way with a lot of the big businesses that are in the United States. They're not owned by United States people anymore. And so we can't just go out and default on things. We've got to work this out to be able to be amongst ourselves. I mean, we can't just not pay our bills. We've got to not pay the bills that are owned to the people in the United States, and we've got to tighten our own belt in order to do this, as well as everybody else's. We have to cut back on how much we pay. We can't say, no, we're not going to pay.
So what do you think that they should be cutting back then?
Oh, I think they should be cutting back. I've said so over and over again on everything. There are three or four things that should not be cut back. One of those, of course, being the Social Security, because that was paid in already. That's not something that you can cut back. This has already been paid for. We should be at least aware of that fact and acknowledge it. Then there are a lot of things that we understand, for example, repairing roads and things like that, that are going to cost us more money if we don't do them now as opposed to doing them later. And so we should be careful about how much we cut back. We can cut back. There are an awful lot of things that can be cut back and that are administrative, et cetera, that can be cut back. For one, we're paying huge money to federal employees, and that needs to be cut back because we can't continue doing that. That's what Greece did. They kept on giving out all this money to their federal employees until there was no money left to give, and now their federal employees are stuck with nothing. I mean, they didn't just get cut back. They got cut off. And that's going to happen in the United States if we don't wake up and get to acknowledge the fact that something has to change and needs to be changing a little bit for right now in order to prevent being just chopped off later on.
President and the First Lady start by setting an example by not having to go to Spain and taking old family members they haven't seen in years and spending $11,000 an hour on a jet. How about going somewhere local and tightening their belt there and starting off with an example?
The president makes $250,000 a year. He can afford to pay for that holiday if he wants to go on it.
Exactly.
Well, and just like Jerry Brown, governor of California, set an example by covering a lot of his own expenses.
Exactly. And there is no reason why the president can't be doing that. As I say, he makes $250,000 a year, and he actually has to spend nothing. He doesn't even have to buy his own groceries. I mean, he has the money he can spend.
Well, yeah. I mean, groceries, and there are some perks that go along with it. You know, I give him that. But like Riley was saying, I mean, there's some things that, you know, especially in a tight economic era, that could be, you know, better prioritized. You know, First Lady traveling to South Africa and Bosnia and focusing on youth leadership and education, health and wellness. I'm getting that from the White House website right now. But
we need to send our diplomats there, and nobody has hired the president's wife as a diplomat.
Exactly, she's probably not even trained or qualified to be a diplomat. Why is she over? Which brings up another point. And this is one thing that frosts my cookies, is why are we so worried about like the health and education wellness of other countries when we have such a huge problem here? I mean, here in Eugene, Oregon, you can't go downtown without finding somebody begging for money on a street corner. In fact, they're now taking two or three corners of each corner now begging. You know, you didn't see that a couple of years ago around here.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Why aren't we worried about ourselves for a change?
Because people are not outraged enough. Where's the outrage of all this it's basically criminal what the government is doing on a lot of things.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but where are our churches? Where are our public service organizations? Why aren't they taking care of these people on the street corners and such things? I mean, that's part of what they're charged with doing and have done in the past and don't seem to be doing now.
Well, part of it is the government needs to take their tightrope from the necks of the congregations and the houses of faith. I'm not just talking Christian churches. I'm talking about the whole gamut. And because they're putting more and more restrictions on even pastors, it's ridiculous.
Oh, and like I think it was a What the Heck Were They Thinking segment that we did a couple shows back where, unfortunately, I don't still have the information. I think it was in New York that if you fed the homeless in the park, you would get cited.
Yeah, that's part of one of the things that's got to go on. Our politically correct system has got to change because it's not politically correct and it's not even morally correct in a lot of instances, and has charged a lot of people doing things that they can't do. For example, if you were to be walking across along the street and see somebody laying in the ditch with their arm chopped off, you don't dare do anything, because if you once go over and try to help them, then you are all technically responsible for them. And if that person were to die, you could be charged with that. So you've got to just let them lay there. We've got to get back to humanity. We've got to concern ourselves with humanity and what we can do for humanity rather than the politics of being sued. There's got to be limits put on to being how much you can sue anybody for example. And this unlimited everything has just got to change. We've got to sit back and reevaluate how our society operates.
Exactly. And, you know, you have Cottage Grove, for instance, who buys the armory. Okay? That could be used for helping the homeless, helping them get back on their feet to be productive citizens again. Instead, they're figuring out, well, let's make it a dance hall. Let's make it this. Let's make it that. They're not thinking about humanity. And you're exactly right, Cliff. It's,
well, I'm not exactly sure what they're negotiating to do with that particular building. But I know, for example, our city, when they bought the golf course, that was for a different reason, and the golf course is actually paying for itself in two different ways. One, it was originally the reason they bought it was to be able to have a place to put the runoff water from the sewers. After it's been cleaned and put out there, it's safe water, but people don't want to drink it, so they were using it to keep the golf course. And of course, since they've got the golf course, they actually use it as a golf course, and it's paying for itself. I mean, and they were talking about buying the hotel over there, and that could turn around to pay for itself. So I don't know if the building, the armory, is going to be used. I mean, there's a lot of offices and building and stores and things that could be rented out in there. It could possibly pay for itself too, but I don't know if that's what they're going to do. But you're right; we need to be spending more money. And again, we've got to change the general drift of what our federal and regional government is doing, because they're the ones who tell you how you can spend the money that you make that you take in as a city or a community or whatever. Because, you know, the state passes out a lot of money, but they also regulate how you can spend it.
Yeah.
So we've got to concern ourselves with some of these regulations and this political corrupt crap.
Well, like I was saying, is that for the health, they're going to have to raise the limit. But I also agree with Republicans. There's going to have to be deep cuts. They're going to have to tighten their belts. And that just doesn't mean, you know, what affects directly the American people. That means all around. And they're going to have to work on not making this issue happen again. And, you know, and they're going to have to get some better controls over it. I mean, I'm sorry, like, you know, throwing money out there, like, for example, $50 million for the stupid bus project here in Eugene, the attitude is, well, if we don't grab that money because the carrot's out there, then somebody else is going to grab it. So we want to go out there and get it whether we need it or not. I mean, that's one of the things that also needs to be looked at. But there's going to have to be, if they're going to raise the limit, it's going to have, basically they're just going to have to go through credit counseling is what it boils down to, and learn how to manage their money better.
Well, credit counseling I don't think is in the books. The way we do credit counseling is by changing the person. And so we're going to have to look, and we're going to have to be very careful and watch very careful what's going on in this next election, because huge changes have got to be made, just like they were made in this last election. But why back again to the bureaucracy. We can make all the changes we want to in the Senate and the House, but the bureaucracy is what's running the Senate and the House. So we've got to make changes in that bureaucracy, otherwise things are not going to change. These people are going to be elected to office. They depend on the bureaucracy to tell them what to do and how to act in office. And if they don't have, if we haven't elected people that are strong enough, they're going to be told what to do, and nothing is going to change. So we've elected someone for change, and it's not going to happen. Exactly like we have with the president. We elected him for change, but he doesn't know how to change anything. And so consequently, that change hasn't happened. Or if it has happened, it's basically one of those things where the president's opinion is exactly that of who he talked to last. And so consequently, if he was there and everybody is Democrat, he's going to have that opinion. Now that everybody is not Democrat, he's having a different opinion. And if it goes even more over to the Republican side, he's going to have a different opinion. And so we've got to find somebody who has enough fortitude and enough of an opinion of their own to actually try to fight for what they want. I don't think President Obama has fought for anything. He's just sat back and listened. And if you don't agree with him, he doesn't even listen. So we've got to change him first.
Well, yeah. So
just eat your peas.
Yeah, exactly. Eat your peas.
Yeah. Well, that's a good statement because I like peas. Most people like peas. Let's change that word to spinach.
Yeah. Well, if people didn't hear the on the news President Obama's comment about that, I have a soundbite here.
How these guys are going to be thinking 6 months from now in the middle of election season when they're all up. It's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. So we might as well do it now. Pull up, eat our peas. I'm prepared to take on significant heat from my party to get something done.
And he will.
Yeah, I will take on significant heat from both parties at this particular point. And unfortunately, I hate to say it, but at this point he deserves it because he hasn't taken on any heat to this point.
Well, and one other thing I want to throw in there, and we have 14 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887 if you want to give us a call. Going back to Jerry Brown, there's ways to make cuts that are painless. One of the things that Jerry Brown did, he cut off just cell phones to state employees, 48,000 state employees, which turned out to be 96,000 cell phones, which saved over $20 million a year. You know, you do like some companies, you let the people use their own personal cell phones and pay them $10-$20 a month, on their phone bill and to help them out, but that saves a huge chunk of money.
I agree. And why did we have each person had two phones? Why did they have that many? I mean, how do you need two cell phones?
That I don't know, but I know that, like in my job, I have two cell phones. One's personal, one's company.
Well, like I say, I don't see us paying, in this particular case, they pay for one, you pay for one, but we paid for both. Why? So,
my company also has I haven't signed up for it, but if I wanted to give them their cell phone back and use mine for business, they will pay, I think it's about $15 a month onto my cell phone bill.
See, I won't afford that. I don't think we necessarily need to cut people off entirely, like he took all the phones away, but we need to at least cut it down. So even if it was reasonable, each person got one, that would cut $10 million a year off of it, but I mean, half of that price, and it doesn't even need to be that high. So we don't make any
Let me throw the example back here, because I'm reading more in the article. What Jerry Brown did, what doesn't seem like a lot of money, but turns out to be a lot of money. Each of the cell phone costs an average of $36 a month, or $432 a year. Times that by 48,000 state employees, and that's a hell of a lot of money. But it doesn't seem like that much when you look at, what's $36?
But they had two.
Well, even if they just have one, it's still. Is taking what doesn't seem like much times, 48,000 people.
That's where it starts getting up to be money, yes.
Exactly.
So even if they did pay half of your, if they just paid $15 a month on your home phone, on your own phone, that would cut that in actually by three times. I mean, it would make a huge difference and still leave them with some sort of service.
Right. So how much of the federal government could they cut back unnecessary services like that? How much money could they really save without really hurting anything?
See, that's what I'm talking about. If you go back and if you go online and look at how much each senator and each house, each representative pays for their staff, each one of them has a staff. And the House of Representatives, each one of them is paying over $1 million a year just for their staff. If they were to cut that down, they don't need that big a staff. I'm sorry. If they would do some of their own job instead of spending their entire time out trying to canvass for more money to get back in the job, they could actually spend a little time doing some of that work on their own. They could cut each one of those. If we cut each and every one of the staff numbers as far as how much they are authorized for to pay for their staff, we could cut it. It would be somewhere around $250 billion a year, and that's a huge amount of money when you talk about all of it. And yet, we'd still have half of the staff that's there, and we're talking about many, many people per person that are on the staffs, and they don't need that many people. They just don't need that many people.
Well, let me throw this one out to you. This is a headline just came out an hour ago. The president broke his target and has raised $86 million for his campaign, exceeding the $60 million quarterly target. How can somebody raise $86 million for a campaign, and yet we're struggling as far as why can't they use that, whatever they use to raise $86 million, use that same scenario to help pay our debt?
Absolutely.
Well, that's the case, and how many people are raising that kind of money to spend on? Of course, again, what are they spending that money on? That's all being spent on advertising and promotion and stuff like that. So at least it's going to be spread around to other parts of the country and other parts of this society, and spread out back into the society. But you're right. That's what I keep saying. We don't need to have that much money being spent on campaigns. There are so many places we need to reform and change things, and one of those things is campaign reform, campaign finance reform. The money that they're raising. This man is a president. He's out there using the president's office to raise that kind of money. He's out there speaking as the president and charging huge amounts of money to speak as president to raise that kind of money. I mean, so he's doing both jobs while we're paying him for doing one job. And so things have got to change. I think we should – I don't know how at this particular point. But we need to sit down and really think about how to change things, because this is one of the things that's embroiled in our
– Well, especially something that's really important, like this from the Washington Post. Is commenting that Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner has warned that failure to raise the debt limit could cause the country to default on its loans and trigger a global financial crisis. And so, yeah, I would say that would classify under, well, it's kind of important. But why aren't they, like I say, why are they just dealing with it now at the last minute? You know, I can only relate to it to my own personal situation. If I know that, well, like when I declared bankruptcy last year, I saw where it was coming from. I started cutting money that I was spending. You know, I couldn't go to my employer and say, "Hey, I need more money. Give it to me," which is what they're doing to us, you know, to help my own personal situation. My only options were I had to cut off things I didn't need and get it down to the bare minimum, and finally, you know, I had no choice but to declare bankruptcy.
Well, see, that's the thing. It was May 16th that the federal government ran out of money. And that's what the federal government, even back then, decided to make arrangements and to change things around to borrow more money. So it raised the limit on the credit card. But there's a point where we have to pay our bills in other ways instead of raising more money. I mean, we can't do that. We can't go and say, okay, my limit on my credit card is $5,000, so since I'm going to spend $7,000 this year, I want to raise the limit. Sooner or later, you got to pay this money back. Our limit is $14 trillion, not $5,000, but it's basically the same thing. There comes a point where we have to spend less money so that we have money to pay some of what that $14 trillion or going to be $15 trillion or whatever it is back each month. We take in $120 billion less each month than we spend.
Uh-huh.
And we know that. Why are we still doing it? Who's allowing this to continue to happen?
Well, I think it's because it's too easy to say, because in a sense we're prisoners to the government. We're just going to raise fees, you know. Again, locally in the state of Oregon here, they're saying that they don't have money for XYZ, so what are they going to do? They're going to raise taxes, they're going to raise fees. And also, like what Oregon's finding out, is that the sources of revenue generating, which is the people, a lot of people are leaving Oregon. A lot of businesses are leaving Oregon, and the revenue sources are not there anymore. And they're, but again, their only solution is to, again, raise taxes and fees instead of working on, okay, well, what can we do to make Oregon a lot better and a lot more attractive to bring business in?
That's exactly what's happening in the federal situation, too. A lot of people are leaving the United States. Big manufacturers are leaving the United States, going somewhere where it's less expensive to build or manufacture what they do. And so, consequently, the United States, it's going to happen. We are fast becoming a third-world country. Instead of being the top of the barrel, we're now number six, I think it is, and we're rapidly going down. So we're going to be a third-world country one of these days with nobody manufacturing anything and not knowing how to pay our debt, and we're going to end up exactly. Now, once we do, hopefully we're going to get to that point before we're so far gone that it can't be fixed. Or maybe it will never be that far gone. It's just going to take a huge hit in the face and slap in the face before we can actually recognize the fact that we've let this take place. But we as Americans in this particular point, I'm sorry, I have to say this, we're the ones allowing this to happen. We're not changing things. What to change is something we've got to sit back and figure out, but we need to do it soon because it's happening much faster now.
Yeah, the government's regulating us to death as far as new business goes. That's why I find people taking their businesses elsewhere.
Well, I'm trying to stop the programs like this one where the people can talk and share their issues and concerns.
Exactly. And we need to do something about it. I mean, this is right now is when we need to change our federal government, being the people in it, whether from the president right on down. And but the thing is, as I say again and again, I'll say it, we have to change the bureaucracy. The bureaucracy has remained the same. We don't change those people. We don't elect those people. Those are hired by the elected people, and they stay there, and they don't change them. And so we have the same bureaucracy, and they're telling people what to do from administration to administration, from different senators and representatives on down, and they just keep telling them what to do, and they keep listening to them. We've got to make a situation where that bureaucracy changes as well on a regular basis. We can't just leave them in there.
Yeah, and I want to throw this out in the 2 minutes remaining. Speaking of bureaucracy, this came out yesterday. That the House Republicans failed to stop an enforcement act of energy-saving standards for light bulbs. So basically going along with the ban in 2012 that incandescent light bulbs will no longer be available over 40 watts. You'll be, the only thing you'll be able to buy is the fluorescent light bulb. So that's, again, costing people more money to replace light bulbs, putting more burden. And, of course, just like with the Digital Millennium Act, to digitize the frequencies, they are throwing away a lot of TV sets, our money. So
again, see, that should not be a government position to make that decision. It should be a private business. I mean, if I want to buy light bulbs, then I should be able to. If I don't want to buy them, I should be able not to. And if you want to make your fluorescent bulbs more appealing and sell more of those as opposed to the regular incandescent bulbs, then make them make it apparent that they don't cost them. Because right now they cost significantly more, and that's another story. Maybe next week we should talk about light bulbs.
Oh, maybe. But anyways, thanks for joining in, folks. We'll be back again next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific time. If you have a question, comment, or a topic, send us an email, talk@krbnradio.com.
Bye, everybody.
Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.